Good morning, dear folks, and welcome back to another episode of Comedy, Luxembourg's finest metal podcast. And today, once more, I'm your host, and I have a very special guest today, once more from Austria, Florian, I'm not sure how to pronounce it now in English, but that came quite instantly. Florian is the singer and guitarist in Hills Like White Lions. Yes, we mentioned them quite a lot last year, with reasons, obviously, and today we're here to talk about a genre that is, first of all, very important to us, obviously, and that, in this particular case, Hills Like White Lions has some, quite linked to that genre. So let's just ask Florian if he has some time, and he luckily has some time for us. So thanks for reaching out and agreeing to doing this once more.
Yeah, thank you. Hello, Jill.
Good morning.
The best thing you can say is flow. Then flow. You're safe and
let's go with the flow then.
Hello. I'm good. How are you?
So far, so good. Easy going. That's the way we do it here, and I think that's the best approach to get an easy and comfortable discussion going, let's say. So post-metal is already a big genre on its own, and it came up even more over the last, I think, 15 years, even though its origins is actually tied back way earlier. In the 90s, something started up and nobody was really sure what it was. But, I'll just throw it out there. For example, like for both of us, what does it mean, the term post-metal? Do you have like a certain way of interpretation? What is up with this genre for you? You know, it's a big question, I know.
Yeah, it's a big question. And I thought about it before the podcast, before the recording. And yeah, I think it's the center point is a heavy atmosphere, I guess, and heavy guitars, a lot of growling and shouting more than clean vocals, I guess.
To some extent, yes. That really depends. I think it grew so much, especially again recent years that. It is very difficult to explain this genre compared to, I don't know, like thrash metal, or which is an obvious historical, way of how this genre developed. And but I think you're right. I mean, it is heavier than most genres back in the day that were there, and it is a lot more atmospheric as well. And I think that's the key word. Atmosphere is a key factor for this genre. If it's now atmosphere with, like, let's say, I don't know, synth elements or like atmospheric vocals, like for example you can also do in Hills Like White Lions, just shouting out, you know, there will be a lot of shout out here, but that's the reason why I asked you to do this, so
thank you.
But I think post-metal has way more potential below the surface that it actually, like, in the term itself, it sounds quite boring, to be fair. Post-metal is like, it's just a weird, funny name for something that is way more developed than it actually portrays. So, interesting,
And I also thought, there are many long build-ups, I guess.
In the music.
And I guess it's also more of a American or thing from the USA, I guess, and from North Europe.
Yeah.
Because, I had a hard time thinking of bands not from Northern Europe or the USA. I guess like Cult of Luna, Amen-Ra, and then Isis, the band, of course.
Of course, Neurosis, like Godflesh, and all those big names that... gave this whole idea a push. And I think it's really difficult to pinpoint where this exactly started. And if I look, and I was actually looking for a bit of historical facts, and even the historical facts and the predecessors of post-metal are quite funny to begin with. Okay. I mean, they even mentioned the Melvins, which is like a combination I would not have thought of. I'm not a big connoisseur of the Melvins, but to some extent, it is quite true. It is a very avant-garde kind of genre. There's no real boundaries and no real like, oh no, we cannot put this, let's say, I exaggerate maybe, but a saxophone, which is nowadays also like a quite interesting instrument to put into post-metal, because let's be honest, I can't imagine a classic heavy metal band having a saxophone solo, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's really like there's no boundaries. It's really just like, let's see what happens. Let's see where this creativity brings us. And it is such an interesting genre, and it's filled with, I mean, you mentioned a few artists like Amen Ra or Holy Phone. I don't know. There are several who bring this post, this off. What happens after metal? Because that's basically the term, right? Post is after metal. But there is no after metal. It's basically still metal, and it's basically still super well produced and overloaded even sometimes with a lot of input. So how do you get through this maze? I think that's a good question, you know, how to navigate through the post-metal genre, because it's so so vast and like a labyrinth. There's no real, you have no clue where you're going, basically.
I also had a hard time getting really writing down names of post-metal bands, because I guess all of them have some side genre they're also fitting in.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's like the Ocean with progressive metal, or Pelican with, I guess, post-rock, or Stoner Doomy vibe, and also Inter Arma, I guess, they never said they are post-metal. I looked them up on the biography, and they say they are like heavy stoner and doom, but for me it's somehow it's post-metal.
I agree.
It's like you say, it's very vast and everything is possible, and I think it's also hard to pinpoint
it is
really some names, and also some the genre itself, because if you look it up in comparison to progressive metal, I guess you have many lists of progressive metal bands. In post-metal, there it's not that quite popular, I guess, because of the whole djent thing going on the last 15 years or so. And progressive metal got infused with a lot of these elements of djent. And that didn't happen in post-metal, so it's, I guess, a little smaller subgenre and harder to pinpoint, really. What's going on?
That's true. I mean, compared to the big ones out there, like heavy metal, thrash metal, power metal is still, even though, for example, in Germany, it's like one of the biggest genres. So it's really, again, I mean, the world map plays a role in this particular episode, in the post-metal episode. Mm. It's really hard to pinpoint where to begin. And I mean, you said it earlier as well. I came across so many bands. I mean, that's how I found, actually, I found out about Hills Like White Lions. I was going through Bandcamp. Okay. No, it was really a coincidence, a lucky one, but it's still a coincidence. I was going through Bandcamp, you know, that you can just basically look through the different genres. There is no post-metal genre. There's post-rock.
Yeah.
Because that was basically the first idea. Let's say we do something different. We infuse it with a heavier vibe, meaning rock. And I mean, Hills Like White Lions was under the post-rock flag, let's say. So I have a feel that even though many bands are rightfully so proclaim themselves as, we do something similar than post-metal, it's just like, let's say, a red flag that they put on their band name to basically pinpoint people, this is something else, because there are so many bands, as you said, like progressive metal, they mix it with djent, they mix it with deathcore. Suddenly there's technical stuff in there, which is like, what? You know, it's really like a personal thing. So, and I honestly am convinced that post-metal is maybe one of the more personalized genres, because everybody can basically add their own sauce. There's no real rule or anything. Not that there would be, or there has to be, but it's really like an individual approach to a genre, let's say.
Yeah.
It's quite, sure. Yeah, it's really weird, actually. That's why, yeah. I mean, I was struggling for quite a while. I really wanted to talk about post-metal and the whole post idea, because post, no, is not necessarily like the guy bringing out letters and but it's just a random fact that that we put on stuff that we like, and post metal goes well with gaze, shoegaze elements, which and again you can't really put all those two fun, together, man. You know, but they still go together hand in hand, which is quite funny, actually. It's a form of, as one of my colleagues at work, actually, he's not the biggest of metal listeners at all, right? So he's very open-minded. And he asked me about, obviously, the podcast and everything. And, how did you get into music? And obviously, you show them some big names. And the reaction is almost every time is the same. Like, this is nice. How can music be nice? You know, it was really like a funny an innocent reply to the bands I sent him. But and that got me thinking, like, how would you portray, for example, again, with Hills Like White Lions, if somebody would ask you, and I think we had a question in the Hills Like White Lions episode, if somebody asked you, what kind of music do you play? What would be your reply? You know?
It's because of the whole post-metal thing. At first, we wanted to do some shoegazy ambient thing. Then we wrote the first songs, and it was like, okay, I guess that's post-metal. And when we all finished all songs on the first album, we said, okay, I don't know if it's post-metal. I guess it's progressive metal, but with a little bit of post-metal inside. So now I usually say it's progressive metal because, I sometimes have the feeling for post-metal there's too much going on.
It is
because
true.
Of that whole long build-ups, heavy atmo, slow, mid-tempo, and that hypnotic riff style.
We have
that, but we're changing parts much more if you compare us to Isis, I guess, for example. They are like jamming on the same riff, and it's really hypnotic, and
it's sometimes even drags out through the whole record, like a very repetitive vibe, even though I mean, you said that there are some passages, especially on the latest record of you guys, Meander, are some passages that are quite reminiscent of each other, but they're still not exactly the same, which in post-metal is not an uncommon thing to do. And Amen Ra, for example, is like is a very good example, actually, because the build-up is just insanely long.
like the latest album, the
Modern,
what was the name? With the long passage in Flamish, he's talking in the end of the song, it erupts.
That was on the latest record, The Dawn, right? I think.
Yeah, The Dawn. I forgot the song. But yeah, it's not that it's a bad thing or anything. It's a thing you have to be in the right mood for, I guess.
Exactly, yeah.
I have days I can't listen to it because also of time limitation.
true.
If you're driving to work a quarter of an hour, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, you don't have time for this kind of music because,
you can't even finish one song depending on the band. Yeah. It's just too damn long.
You really have time. You really need the mood. I don't know. I listened to a lot of post-metal when I was studying, listening to it in the background. And I guess that was one of the writing thesis and all of that. I guess this was the best place for this kind of music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hypnotical. It is like food for the soul, as my colleague would say it.
Okay.
Because even though he doesn't necessarily like it, but he actually came up with a term that I think wraps the whole idea of post-metal quite nicely. He's like, that's a form of art I have not listened before. So I was like, hey, wait, there's apparently there's one genre out there which they just call randomly art metal, which is, again, a funny name. But I think it sums up quite well, because a post-metal record, no matter what band it is basically starts on the same basis as every band, is a blank canvas with a shit ton of ideas and no clue where to start. I mean, obviously that you're a musician as well. I'm partially a musician. Mm. It's quite difficult if you're stuck with a few songs that you just cannot find the right progression to continue and finish it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have a feeling that several, especially in this genre, post-metal, is just like, oh, I have a blank canvas. I have like 15 cans of color. Never mind. I just pour everything on it and I see what happens. And I basically let everything intervene and flow in that sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It's super philosophical in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's all about the flow and the atmosphere going from one place to another in a long journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really a good, you said it, you were listening to it while you were studying. I mean, honestly, nowadays, if I'm stuck at work or even on my personal PC at home, if I need to work on stuff, I need to have some music in the background. I mean, that's the proper way I can function at 100%. And very often, even though I'm not necessarily choosing my playlist, but very often, it ends up with the same artists. And I wrote them down. So I will just give you a few names and then we can maybe jump into these. Because I think, at least right now, are my favorite bands in this particular elemental atmosphere that is to some extent post-metal. So I mean, Alcest is a big name, but almost every day they are somewhere hidden in the background. Holy Fawn, I said it. Kardashev, maybe you know them. Also American Black Gaze band, which is another diversion from the theme. Rollo Tomassi. Yeah.
Like I listened to them some weeks ago, but to be honest, I don't remember how I felt about it.
Yeah,
I mean, I checked them out because I read them a lot of times already.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, to be fair, again, a shout out again. Meander is still on my playlist.
Thank you.
And I think that will linger there for some time until you guys are ready to put something new out. So it's a really therapeutical. Is that the right term? Therapeutic.
Okay, I guess, yeah.
therapeutic record. It gets below your skin and it... I don't know. There's just something with it that I cannot explain. But I think that's a valid good point for you guys and for the people out there who reacted actually to... I actually wanted to tell you that earlier, but I forgot. So I will just do it here on the show. Never mind. We got quite a lot of returns and compliments that we are showcasing you guys, first of all.
Okay,
and a lot of those really niche underground bands from actually around the world. So I really hope that it shows in some extent to you guys as well, that they will reach out to you and maybe even, I don't know, buy merch, buy stuff. And you people out there listening, you better do, because we will know if you don't.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's really cool of you that you showcased that much of niche artists.
Yeah,
and smaller artists.
I mean, we all
really know. Big shout out to you now.
Okay, thank you very much. I gladly take it. I mean, it is very difficult in any case for any artist to bring out their music to the people, and even more difficult to people like you, or I don't know, several other bands that we discovered recently or that we are reaching out to. I mean, obviously, we all know the big ones out there, and they don't, honestly, and sorry that I'm saying it, but they don't need that attention, that much attention nowadays. Nah. They are happy with what they have, and so you need to turn your head away, maybe, and look at the whole spectrum, and maybe, and even in that sense, you might find post-metal as an interesting new thing that you have not really thought of, and maybe this genre will get to you in a different way, maybe, who knows. In any case, that's what we do here. We're advocates of good music and try to spread the word as well as we can. what were your, that's another question I had for you, actually, because again, that flows into your work with Hills. What do you think are the inspirational factors that lead to somebody like, okay, I have this idea of a song, super long intro, super heavy, atmospheric, and dragged out. It's really like, it's tough to listen to. But where do you start, and where do you think those people get such an idea? Because it's not the atypical idea of writing a song.
Nah. So the question is why you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
More like why you do it, or why?
It's a tough question.
Yes, I know.
I think that was the same thought I had when I first listened to heavier music, and got to listen to bands that I didn't get at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I simply couldn't. I couldn't. Like get it in my head, like I didn't like Mastodon in the beginning, and now they're my favorite band of all time, and
yeah,
that
I
stuff.
Get you, man.
And also like some bands like Auranzi Pazuzu, and I didn't get it, and now I also do music like that, and I guess it's a vessel for atmosphere, because if you don't do that long, sometimes dragging depends on the mood you're in, the time you have. If you don't do that parts, you won't get that kind of atmosphere, I guess.
That is true.
And so you have to keep these parts interesting, put something in, put something out, a little bit of vocal there, a little bit of synth, piano, change in rhythmics with the drums, the bass, changes or something like that. So that's how we do it. We change things up in longer passages,
mm-hmm.
That they don't stay the same. But you need the long parts to get some kind of atmosphere and to really dig in and going. Yeah, that the song goes under your skin.
I mean, I'll just go back to Meander for 1 second, because that actually is quite an interesting explanation, and it concludes my thoughts actually for Meander. Because I mean, sometimes you need to drag out stuff to just show an emotion even more, or bring up the atmosphere to let's say come to this state of ecstasy where just everything explodes and
also it gets more important. If you play a part longer, it's more important. If a part is short, it's like the listener is like, okay, it's not that important to hear it. But if you're going really long for a part, the listener must listen to it. He can shut the device down or something like that.
That is
true. But if it's longer, it's more important. And
But again,
so it's more emotional and
yes, exactly.
More weight.
I think that's the term. You build up emotion through this whole build up, and I'm just gonna say it. I think in that case, maybe Meander, at least to me, feels like it's one big song actually, because they intervene and they keep. The songs keep the same level, those famous red line throughout the whole record. So maybe even though it's not intentional, but maybe some bands do it the same way and just cut the songs because, I don't know, production-wise, whatever, there are some reasons for it. But
yeah, playing live is also
A reason, yeah.
Thing. And you're also like have these, if every song is starting with a long intro and that, it's also in the live situation sometimes harder to get the attention of the listeners. So if you also have heavy song beginnings, you're catching more attention, and so you can a little bit play with it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
The playing around part is mainly, I mean, for live shows, it's definitely the most important thing because you don't want your listeners to, after 3 minutes of intro, oh, I'm just going to grab another beer.
But it's not like intentionally written in this sense. But if you already have long songs, then you can think about, okay, how should I cut them to make some sense? That like we did it with Meander 6 and 7. Yeah. So it was essentially one song, six.
Yes.
And it was, I think it's 13 minutes or something like that would have been. And then we thought about, what if we cut it here and do it in two songs? We can play it live more easily.
Yeah.
And you also have some heavy beginning, which we often don't have. So it's also, again, some kind of
I mean,
change.
Mondkrau is the heaviest, maybe the heaviest song you have. At least to me until now,
which gives
the statement that, like, especially the end of the record, which is like this boom manifest, is your riffage start is like, oh, okay, this is different, and you get this straight away, the attention span is increased in that sense, because I don't think it's true, actually. I don't think as a full song, I'm not saying it would have not made any sense, but it gives the record like another, like, you know, that push that, okay, this is the end now, and get ready for the end, because otherwise it would have maybe just flown into the end, not like, I don't know, I get very emotional now and very philosophical, but I like doing that, so.
Me too. You mentioned Alcest and Holy Fawn. I think it's also interesting because I read the name Alcest a lot of times when searching up post-metal. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's more of a shoe as a black gaze, the black gaze pioneers, but they're all they're everywhere when searching for post-metal, and they're similar to Holy Fawn.
They're very
Very similar. And I love them both. So I had a really long Alcest phase. Also Shelter. It's very, very. I love that album.
It's my favorite album.
It's so, I don't know. It's so honest and emotional, and
it's super fragile. As you said, it's very honest. It's very innocent. It's just super innocent, and no one expected that record, because when this record came out from Alcest, I was also in my prime in terms of Alcest fan, and wow, this is the best band ever. Obviously others came, but Alcest is still there, and I don't know, the atmosphere these guys build up is still on a different level, and people were quite a bit upset with Shelter.
I understand, but it's music is about changing things up, I guess.
Exactly.
Being artistic and not going with the flow. And I love to listen to this album when riding my bike in the woods or something like that on a beautiful summer day in the morning. It's the perfect. It's such a vibe.
Yeah, it's just again a whole different aspect. Even though it has. I don't think there are many heavy notes on that record. Maybe at the end, the Deliverance. But on the other hand, it's the perfect vacation record.
Of course. Like, you know, you can compare it to Sunbather by Death Heaven because of the whole sun theme.
but
completely different record. But it has some kind of I like the whole aesthetics of dark summer, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you also know this. Yeah, it's not a term, but like Lana Del Rey also like Summertime Sadness. The song has it in the title itself. Yep. And if you listen to that record, Born to Die, I guess, it has that whole, I don't know, it's like a summer, but with a twist, and a dark twist. And yeah, black gaze bands do it a lot of times. Shelter, for example, has also some kind of this dark and, yeah,
dark feeling and gloomy.
In the background. In the background. It's lingering, but it's not fleshed out in full form. And I love that vibe.
Same. Yeah. Same. It was, you said it before, they're always being mentioned as a post-metal band. I do not necessarily agree with that, because I agree with you. It is a black gaze band, and maybe the first.
The pioneers, no?
The pioneers of black gaze, and what this genre can become over the years, because there are not many bands who do this particular vibe, but there are more and more coming. Mm. So, they definitely have some post-metal elements. Like, again, the atmosphere, again, is a predominant factor for Alcest or for Holy Thorn. And I'm really looking forward, because when we are recording this, we are just a few days in when they announced their newest record. So that will be another highlight of 2024 for sure. And this would actually lead us perfectly into let's say our last question already. We said it, there's so much evolution going on, and this genre, I think we have only scratched the surface. Which what can people do with first of all, not necessarily portraying a genre, but bringing in their vision and just naming it this particular term, post-metal. But where do you go from here? Where can post-metal be in the 30 years? Do you feel like this genre could be one of the newest groundbreaking genres maybe in the next, who knows, 10 years, compared to like modern metal, which is now the gentiest and the most modern way of portraying metal, like Spirit Box and all those bands? You think post-metal has or even wants this particular attention, or is it really for those nerds like us who just look for a very simple is maybe the wrong term, but I will still call it simple and easy way to escape everyday life and retreat. It's more like a retreat genre. You think what will the evolution of post-metal, of the post-metal scene bring?
I don't think that there are a lot of new bands in the genre, I guess, because it fades out in different genres, and it's a whole a little bit of post-metal, a little bit of that. But so like the post-metal bands are, Isis and Cult of Luna, the classics. Yeah. And these are the post-metal bands. So I guess the genre is fading into post-rock, I guess, a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And I don't really see a future or making money with the genre or making money with some kind of this music. I don't see anything like that. And it will go in different genres. It will change, and it's more rock, and it's more like another genre and that. But I guess it's because the length of the songs itself, because it's a niche thing to listen to. Yep. But I see some potential in tiny bits of the music and the more atmospheric parts and the more playful parts, because I think many of these parts could perfectly fit, I say the bad word, TikTok or Instagram reels, like playing in the background, like you have a wonderful scenery and landscape, and you have some kind of Russian circles going on in the background or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or
agreed.
Clean passages. I think there's potential in that case. So for using it in this kind of media or setting.
Interesting.
I can imagine it, yeah. But for the genre itself, I think it's a niche thing, and to some extent, think it has to be a niche thing, because it's so niche that it couldn't be Yeah, it couldn't be mainstream, because then if it would be mainstream, it would be something else.
So that is true. Yeah, that is actually true.
I have the feeling, because the long songs, hypnotic, repetitive style of music, harsh vocals. And me myself, I began listening to post-metal many years after I began to listen to rock and metal itself. So,
mm-hmm. True, actually. Yeah. For me, it was also like, I wouldn't say a recent discovery, obviously not, but... I think you said it there with the reels and everything in the background. So more like an evolution on an unaware basis, that it is somewhere, as it has always, well, it's always meant to be, somewhere in the background, lingering and waiting for the opportunity for somebody to catch wind and say, oh, what is this?
Yeah.
So again, a very innocent approach, but I mean... I guess that's also how we... got into this genre to some extent. So I think on this note, that's probably the best we can end this episode today, which is as you might have heard, for those who stayed until the end, obviously, it is not easy talking about those super niche genres, especially this one, because I thought of this genre for quite some time, and I'm super glad that you helped me today, at least not necessarily uncover something we didn't know, but to again get lost in this labyrinth of ideas and
it was
and
a pleasure emotions. Thank you.
Thanks for being here, man, and
thank you for inviting me.
No problem. Thank always you. A pleasure. I mean, this will probably happen again on some day or the other.
I'm in.
You're in. I'm in. Good.
I'm in.
I mean, maybe we can. I mean, this episode will probably air before that, but we'll catch up in April, latest then.
Yeah.
And then we'll see where we can head with this idea. So, in any case, thank you again to Flo from Hills Like White Lions, and please, people out there, go and listen to their stuff, please. And give us a like, subscribe, and all the usual thing that you say at the end. In any case, it was a pleasure today. Thanks, Flo. And
thank you
and hear you very soon, I guess.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye.